Blog Talk Radio.
Gonna tell you a little bedtime tale, legend it will become. Burgers flying out the door, sail on. 2-for-1, no concern for the future, living for today. Fast food bite on your way, lay it all to waste. The masses are afflicted now. Moo, mad cow, mad cow. Mad cow, line dance song.
Hey, Sangai Nation, Sangai QT back with you as usual here on a Friday afternoon. Real quick before we jump into things, if you're looking for some pro wrestling, tonight you have WCWO like usual in Indianapolis, Indiana, and Clash Wrestling in Brownstown, Michigan. Tomorrow night, AWA in Foley, Alabama, BWF featuring Casey Carlisle in Appomattox, Virginia, and the NSA in Palmer, Alaska tomorrow night. So get out there, support your local wrestling wherever it might be. And without further ado, I would like to welcome our guest today. He is the owner and promoter of Diamond Championship Wrestling in Mississippi. Gene Miller, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Appreciate you having me.
Now, since today is your first time with us, we will start you out with our traditional first-timers question. What got you into the business of professional wrestling?
Well, I've been in the business right now about 31 years. Just like everybody else, I started watching it when I was, you know, a young kid, 5-6 years old on TV at home. And the older I got, the more interested I was. I was actually a late bloomer. I didn't get started until I was probably in my early 30s before I started training. That's due to because I was in the military traveling quite a bit. It's not until I got out of the Army until I started training to be a wrestler.
Now, prior to getting in the business yourself, had you been going to very many shows, kind of scouting out wrestling shows, or is this something that is once you got out of the service, you went straight into it without a real feel for the business?
Yeah, that's exactly how it happened. I think I've only been to like 3 live events when I was probably about 18, 19 years old. And not too long after that, I went into the Army and I served almost 10 years. And then once I got out, local gym in Columbus, Georgia was owned by Jerry Oates, and got to talking to him. He'd been around the business a long time and he had a training school. So I signed up and started training. That was in 1987.
Now in recent years, like I mentioned, you started up your own promotion in Mississippi. What was it that made you want to get into the promotional end of professional wrestling?
Well, I'd actually ran a promotion up in Michigan. That's where I'm from originally. I had the NWA Michigan group up there for close to 7 years. And then I'd left there in 2002 and did some traveling around and different things. And I've been in Mississippi now, I'm thinking it's probably 6 to 7 years now. And we've owned this organization. Me and my wife are partners. And we've had this, June will be 2 years. There's a couple other organizations down here, and I decided to just go out on my own. I'm older than most everybody. I'm almost 64 years old, so my body's not what it used to be able to do to get in the ring and wrestle all the time. So it's easier to do the promoting aspect of it and run quality shows down here.
Obviously, being a wrestler yourself, it gives you a bit of an advantage over a lot of promoters that strictly have only worked on the business side of it. You kind of have an idea of what needs to be done in the ring as well. Do you think that a lot of the promoters today that start promotions lack that type of experience to know both ends of the wrestling business in order to kind of meld them together successfully?
Well, most of the people down here in Mississippi and Louisiana and Alabama, most of the promoters are active wrestlers. So they're aware of what needs to be done for the matches. The one thing I'm happy about not really wrestling anymore is I can give 100% of my time to making the show work. When you're wrestling, you have to worry about your match. So that takes a lot of time away from the promoter booker type of deal. You know what I mean? So for me, I can give 100% of my time to make the show work from the time we get there set up, running the show, and then even afterwards, you know, of concluding the show and tearing down everything.
Now, with the advent of social media, we've heard a lot of people complain about the new generation of wrestling, which is something that's gone on since the dawn of wrestling. Every generation complains about the one coming up behind it. But a lot of people feel that the younger generation doesn't necessarily work as hard. They don't necessarily try to promote themselves or the companies they're working for. We hear a lot of promoters complaining about that type of thing. In your own personal situation with your company, do you see that the younger talents are working as hard as the veterans, or do you see that the younger talents maybe don't have a grasp for that just yet?
Well, I have to kind of agree with that to a certain extent. I think the younger talent nowadays, I think it depends on how they came up in the business, like who their trainer was, who got them started, and then once they, you know, started cutting their teeth doing their wrestling. Me personally, I can't speak for really anybody else, but me personally, I'm on my wrestlers all the time about cutting promos on Facebook, you know, getting things out there. The stuff that we put out on our Facebook page, I tell the wrestlers, like, share it, you know, get the info out there if you're on the card. You know, as a promoter, you know, we're not all rich like, you know, the big organizations. So we have to do everything we can do to get the information out there. And I tell everybody that goes down to the, you know, the initial person that's wrestling on the first match all the way up to the main event to include me. You know, we all work as a team because without each other, you know, there's no way you're going to make it work anyways.
And you mentioned having ran the NWA Michigan company. You also wrestled for Jim Crockett Promotions when that company was still an NWA affiliate. Obviously, you've got a lot of ties to the NWA. What do you think of the current day NWA as it stands right here in 2019?
Well, I know they're I know he's working hard. I think there's only I haven't really kept really active with it right now because I know there's only two titles that I'm aware of. The heavyweight champion, you know, the world heavyweight champion for the men and for the women. Now, somebody told me the other day that they've got a North American title out right now, but I haven't heard anything about that. I know there's plans in the works. Haven't seen it in writing or anything like that, that he eventually wants to branch off. Don't know if he's going to do what the old companies did and have affiliates or how they're going to do that. I mean, since I've got, you know, previous ties to them, I would love to, you know, again, be affiliated with them, but it's just a wait and see type of situation with them to see what direction they're going to go.
Now, back when you were wrestling for the Crockett Promotion, obviously it was a territory and the territory system was still in full effect at that point. What did you think of the shift going from the territorial system in professional wrestling to the independent system of professional wrestling?
I was fortunate when I worked for the Crockett promotion. I was up there during the time when it was Crockett promotion, and then when Ted Turner and WCW bought him and took over. Nowadays, it's what's called an enhancement talent. That's what I was. I used to go up every Mondays when they were shooting TV, and I would come in and be an enhancement talent and work for them. I did go on the road and, you know, in different towns like St. Louis and do the same things when they were shooting TV. So I was fortunate to cut my teeth that way because, I mean, I was fresh out of school going up there. Back then, you know, it was pretty strong in what I call regional wrestling and stuff like that. But when Vince took over the WWF back in the day, he's the one that made it go global. And when he did that with all the national TV programs that they had and WCW had, that kind of hurt the regional or independent scene because it wasn't like you could build a guy up like they used to, run a bunch of videotapes, and he's getting ready to come in 2 weeks and build a star up. Just you can't do that. It's hard to do that, I should say, anymore.
Now, a lot of promotions on the independent circuit, especially if they're in an area that have athletic commissions, some of those commissions hamper their ability to run their companies how they would normally do it. There's some states that have extremely strict commissions. Some states have very lax ones. Some states have no commissions at all. What are your feelings on the athletic commissions, and do you have to deal with those very often?
In the state of Michigan, in Mississippi, we don't really have to deal with it. They have a commission, but they're pretty lax. Now, the neighboring states, Louisiana, is probably one of the hardest commissions around, which I don't really have to deal with because I don't run shows over there. Now, Alabama, I had my promoter's license over there last year, and I ran a few shows over there. Their commission's not bad, but, you know, it's like anywhere else. It's a political clog that everybody wants their cut of the money that you make. So as an independent promoter in the independent group, it's hard enough as it is to make the money, you know, to make sure everybody's being paid and you get all your bills paid and trying not to lose money. But in the same token, I do understand why you have commissions because you need rules and, you know, governing bodies to make sure there's groups out there that don't run around and run shows. And as we all know, they do that and not pay. There's groups out there that don't pay their guys. They just don't have the funds to do it. So in that respect, I can understand why a commission is good to be around. So.
Now, another thing that is kind of a hot thing here in professional wrestling in the last couple of years with the technology becoming what it is now is streaming services. A lot of independent companies will stream their shows, be it on the Roku channel or YouTube or Fight TV or nothing else on TV or whatever other avenue they have. And a lot of people outside of their area get to watch and support those promotions. What do you think of the idea of streaming the independent shows?
I think it's a great idea. The more people can put their product out there, the better off it is. We had a TV program for close to 6 months on a very local channel around here. Plus, we were on their Facebook page. They shared the product onto our Facebook page. And we got a lot of good reception from it. A lot of people watched it. So I think it's really a great idea. Now, we're reorganizing and trying to get sponsors and all that to where we want to run strictly on Facebook and strictly on YouTube. Now, Fight TV, I haven't checked into it yet to see what you have to do. or like the Roku. I don't know a lot about those. So we're just trying to start off with Facebook and YouTube and go from there.
I will get you in touch with a guy that probably can help you with that.
Okay, appreciate it.
Now, another big revenue stream for professional wrestling, be it a regional or a small independent or a major national company, is merchandising. Promoters have been selling merchandise with their logos on it for decades now. T-shirts, hats, posters, coffee cups, all manners of merchandise. How has the merchandising aspect of your company been going since you've only been around for a year and a half? Are you seeing kind of an uptake in the merchandise sales?
Yeah, we sell a little bit of stuff at almost every show. We don't have a lot of merchandise. We've got, you know, T-shirts and a couple other things, but we haven't really invested in that way yet. That is an avenue that you can make more money. I stress for my wrestlers to get that, to do that also, because that's how they can make, you know, extra money also.
What would you say has been the strangest piece of merchandise that you've seen a wrestler trying to sell at the merchandise stand?
That's funny that you asked that. I've seen where they came out of a Dollar Tree, believe it or not. It looked like a thing of poop, real squishy. You throw it up against the wall and it flattens out and sticks. That's it, but it sold. You know what I mean? People
absolutely
buy stuff just that, you know. Yeah, just, you know, it's a strange thing, you know. So it's an oddity type thing. Really had nothing to do with wrestling, but so it sold right off the table.
If it puts the dollars in their pockets, you know, so be it, I guess.
Yep, that's true.
Over the last few years, I've seen more and more independent wrestlers trying to branch out of their home areas. It's easier now for people to make a living at independent wrestling than it ever has been before. We see more and more people making independent wrestling their full-time job. I know there's talent all over the country that's constantly looking for new areas to go wrestle. If there was outside talent that was interested in coming to work for you and running a few shows in Mississippi and the surrounding states, how would they best be considered by you to come in?
Well, they would. The best thing for them to do is contact me, you know. Gonna need to see some video of them and a resume, just to see what their character is and, you know, see how we can use it, you know, in that respect.
As your company's been growing and gaining new fans, have you seen an influx in people outside of your actual area that you promote contacting you, looking for bookings, trying to get on shows?
Oh, yeah. Most definitely. We get a lot of people from Louisiana, Texas, Tennessee, Georgia, Alabama, some from Florida. So, I mean, we get every week I get new people contacting us about coming in and, you know, wanting to work, wanting to travel and do that stuff. But it just comes down to between the wrestler and the company, whether or not it's affordability for both of them.
Now, another thing that is big for professional wrestling, just on any scale, no matter the size of the promotion, is WrestleMania week. it is growing into a huge phenomenon in the last 10 years or so, where wherever WrestleMania is held, dozens of promotions will go to the surrounding area and run shows, and there will be conventions and wrestling shows, and a lot of networking goes on there. I know you aren't necessarily going to New York for WrestleMania, but do you think that right around this time is one of the prime times of the year for any company to garner new fans, since wrestling is usually paid a little more attention to for WrestleMania season?
You know, I guess it could be. I mean, that's your WrestleMania is really more mainstream than your independents. I think it really depends on where you're, the company's located at, because what goes on in Mississippi is a whole lot different than maybe what's going on in Michigan or Tennessee or something like that. Every fan's a little bit different. So I think that's a little bit harder to, you know, harder to come up with to see if it's going to work or not. I know when WrestleMania last year was in New Orleans, a lot of the bigger independents were trying to piggyback and run shows over in Louisiana. Now, to jump ahead to the next WrestleMania, when it's going to be in Tampa, I was reading that the WWE is trying to get with the cities and counties down there and block other companies from coming in that surrounding area down there. Now, whether or not they're going to get that done or not, that's going to be a good question. I don't know if you heard or read that anywhere.
I've heard scuttlebutt, but we'll have to see what happens, because I think when a lot of companies go to these cities, there's a lot of money to be made.
Yes, there is.
Another thing that is very popular amongst independent companies is discounting for military personnel. I know a lot of independent companies will offer a special ticket price for people that are actively serving in the military and or have military ID. I know there's a lot of military down in your area. Do you offer any type of military discounts at this point?
Yeah, we do. Part of the reason behind that, because I'm ex-military, so I'm a veteran-owned company. So we definitely give veterans a discount, like you said, as long as they've got an ID card that they can present, whether if they're active military, retired, disabled veteran that has a card. I'm 100% disabled veteran, so I have a card. So, yeah, we do give discounts.
Very, very nice. Now, I understand you have a show upcoming April 13th that is going to be a very big show for you. What can you tell us about that?
Well, Saturday, April 13th, it's in the Ryan Youth Center in Ocean Springs, Mississippi. It's called Mississippi Meltdown. What it is, it's going to be a fundraiser for the junior ROTC group out of Ocean Springs High School. And what the money's going for is going to be supporting the Major Ewing Lawson Scholarship Fund. Their scholarship fund they give out to their kids that are graduating, that are going to some type of college, whether it's a regular college or a tech school or something like that, and they do them in increments of $500. So one of our supporters is an alderman for the city of Ocean Springs. His name's Mike Impey. And he was actually, in 1983, I believe was the year, he was the very first cadet commander of this junior ROTC group. So he was the go-between from us and them to be able to set this up. So it's a pretty big deal. We're advertising it and we're pushing it. You know, we're having them sell tickets to it. And so we're hoping it'll go real well for them.
Well, at this point in time, my co-host QT Vokes is standing by, and I'm sure he has questions as well, so I'm going to pass things along to him.
All right, thank you.
Well, thank you, Sangai. Hello, Gene.
Hello, how you doing?
I'm doing pretty good, not bad. Gene, I saw a picture of VFW Post number 3373 that was located at 4272 Vega Street, Pascagoula, and I have to say it looks really big. Now, both Sign Guy and myself go to Blue Collar Wrestling in Portland, Oregon, and they also, this is also at a big VFW hall. Sign Guy and myself have been there where I'm sure 70 to 80 cars have had to have been in the parking lot. What's the biggest crowd the Diamond Championship Wrestling has seen in Pascagoula, the biggest amount of people?
In Pascagoula, the show we did just a week ago, we had 162 paid come in the door.
Wow.
The venue itself, I think if we packed everybody in, squeezed them in there, you know, we could push probably 275 to 300. But, I mean, if you look at the pictures that we're taking and put on Facebook, 160 people is a pretty bunch. Now, we had a show that we had a birthday party come in to that we did 174 people on that show. That was the biggest count-wise at Pascagoula. Now, the show that we did a show in Ocean Springs, there's a company called Miracle Flight. I don't know if you're familiar with them or not. They're a helicopter company, and they fly special needs kids to doctor's appointments. We did a fundraiser for them, and we had 252 in that building.
Hey, that's so nice.
Wow.
Okay,
go ahead.
Oh, I was going to ask, is it normally for your events $12 ringside and $10 general admission?
Correct. Our ringside is the front row, just the first row is what we charge for $12. Everything else is $10, and then children 5 and under are free with a paid adult.
Oh, okay. Well, that helicopter event sounded fantastic for the special needs kids.
Correct. Yeah, it was a great show.
Wow, fantastic. Well, Gene, I recently saw a promo where DCW heavyweight champion Vladimir Koloff was advising challenger Charles West to keep hitting the pavement because he would never get the one thing that Vladimir cherishes most, the DCW heavyweight belt. I was surprised to see Vladimir in a lucha mask. Do you know if his wife is Mexican, or has he himself trained in the finest Mexican dojos south of the border?
No, Vladimir Koloff, that's not a lucha mask. It's just a regular old mask. Yeah, that it was made. His wife is definitely not Mexican, and his wife makes all his outfits, his mask and his singlets.
Oh, okay. All right. Very good. All right. Would you say that Mr. Vladimir is one of the better dressed DCW wrestlers? Better dressed.
Well, I think that's all up to a personal opinion. He's got some interesting outfits in all different colors. He's got them red, blue, purple, pink. He's not bashful or shy about wearing different colors.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, Gene, when I was in the Coast Guard, I had temporary duty assignment in Gulfport, Mississippi at their Coast Guard base for about a month right before Hurricane Katrina hit in 2005. It's been 14 years now since I had that temporary duty assignment. Can you still see the scars of Katrina in that area? And how much did the people say that wrestling is still helping the community heal?
Well, there's nobody running wrestling in Gulfport as we speak. Some of the city buildings that they have, the community centers, they won't allow us to come in. And it's not just wrestling. They told us, I've been trying for over a year to get into Gulfport. And all the city buildings, they say they if you're an event that charges admission, you can't come in there. They won't allow it. So if I wanted to go in, wrestle in there and do my shows, I'd have to let people in for free. And that makes it a tough business to do. But to get back to one question, yeah, there's a lot of area that Katrina tore up where it just washed away buildings completely. And the land's still vacant. You know, people didn't rebuild. So there's a lot of structure and buildings being built and redone even today as we speak. But there's still a lot of vacant property, you know, that was tore up and never redone.
Yeah, I'm sure that they have new building codes. I'm sure you'd have to build on a much higher foundation, sure.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Oh, okay.
I think it's all based on where you're at on sea level, how high you got to build.
Yeah. Oh, boy. Okay. All right. Well, Gene, are Gene Austin and the Mountain Man still a viable tag team for DCW, and are they still training together?
Actually, no. Gene Austin retired finally. And the Mountain Man, he's been out because he had an injury, but he's getting ready to make his return.
Oh,
okay. He's a singles competitor.
All right. Okay. That's what I was going to ask. When you yourself were wrestling, were you mostly into singles or tag team competition yourself?
I was mostly into singles. It's not that I haven't done tag team wrestling, because I have, but not as much, mainly as singles.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, Gene, what would you rather have as a pre-match meal? Would you rather have biscuits and gravy and pancakes at IHOP, or crab legs and breaded oyster po' boy sandwiches at Gulfport?
That's tough, because do I have to make that choice? Because if I was actively wrestling, I actually wouldn't eat any of that.
Oh,
not healthy. Too heavy to get, too heavy in your stomach to get in the ring and have to work.
Yes, nothing to weigh the stomach down more than an oyster po' boy. Well, Gene, can we ask what your rate and rank were when you were in the Army?
I got out, I was an E6 staff sergeant.
Okay, very good. Okay, what was the rate? Were you like in the infantry or infantry specialist?
Yeah, I was in the infantry. My MOS was 11C, which is mortars.
Wow, okay. Did you ever have a chance to meet Storman Norman Schwarzkopf?
No.
Okay. Well, Gene, did you see the movie Stripes when it came out in 1980, and it starred Bill Murray, John Candy, and a young John Larroquette who had the role of Captain Stillman?
Yeah, I've seen it more than once. Entertainment-wise, it's a good movie.
It's very good. Very good. How do you think Sergeant Holka could have done in his prime against Vladimir Koloff?
Probably not too good. Koloff's a pretty tough guy.
Whoa! Oh, okay. Wow, all right. Well, Sergeant Holka did survive that fall off that tower when a live round came in, wounded in basic training.
That's true.
Okay. When you went to Monroe High School, what were your school colors?
Red and white.
Okay. How many sports did you turn out for in high school?
I played football and baseball.
Wow. All right. Well, now, based on my video analysis, I'm going to guess in football that you were a wide receiver or running back.
A little bit, played a little bit of everything. I was pretty small back then, height and weight wise and stuff like that. So it was tough to do anything other than a running back or a wide receiver.
And this was still in Michigan, where football is king.
Yep, football is big up there, most definitely.
All right. Okay, very good. Red and white were your colors. Okay. Now, Gene, how many referees do you have at Diamond Championship Wrestling, and have any of them been hurt in the line of duty, your referees?
Yeah, we have right now we've only currently have one. I've had others work for us, and, you know, just like any other thing, people go about their own ways for whatever reason. There's a friend of mine that has a school that he has a guy that he's training to be a referee. And once he gets done training, we'll see how he is and put him to work. But currently we've only got one. And to answer the other question, I have not had anybody get hurt as a referee.
Oh, very good. Very good. All right. Well, Gene, in your opinion, how important is the role of the ring announcer, and who is currently doing that duty at Diamond Championship Wrestling?
Okay. Our announcer is Joey Goetz. He's been with us from day one. And he's very the announcer is very important, because he's the first person that the crowd is going to see. And if he comes out there and is what I call being motivated and upbeat with the crowd, then it's going to get the crowd to be upbeat also, to, you know, to get them motivated and want to see the matches. But if you got a ring announcer just out there, he's kind of flat, then the crowd might expect that to be the, you know, the whole tone of the whole night.
Okay. All right. Well, Gene, how are the concession stand? How is the concession stand at the VFW Hall in Pascagoula during your events?
They do a good job. Yeah, the VFW runs the concession stand there, and they do a good job over there. They seem to be making money because they like us being there, so it's got to be doing something good.
All right. Well, Gene, Sign Guy earlier talked about the strangest thing that sold at a concession stand during one of your events. What's the strangest foreign object you have seen a wrestler pull out of his trunks during a DCW match?
That's a good question. A lot of the wrestlers don't use too many foreign objects. I mean, some of them have pulled out brass knucks, which are pretty common. Some of them have pulled out chains. Now, I got one guy that's his name is Mac Daddy Duds. He wears all kinds of gold bling. You know, he's got a little chest that fits in his hand that he puts all his rings in. I seen him use that on a wrestler to cheat to win. So that might be the strangest thing.
That brings up a memory of that tag team that once wrestled for Vince, and they were called Crime Time. Crime Time.
Yep.
Yes. Oh, okay.
Remember the name.
Well, did you recently have a DCW card with a Honky Tonk Man in attendance? A Honky Tonk Man.
Did I have him on my show? He worked one of my initial shows here in DCW. Great guy.
Oh, very good. Okay. Well, Gene, when you were in your wrestling prime, who was the largest man you ever faced in the ring?
Are we talking size-wise?
Size-wise, yes. Who was the biggest opponent you ever faced?
Oh, Lordy. Well, back in the day when it was with WCW, the Road Warriors, you remember the tag team, the Powers of Pain, the Warlord?
Yeah. Oh, yes.
Been in the ring with him, and I did a couple of TV shots with WWF in Detroit, Michigan, when I lived up there, and they had a tag team called the Truth Commission. Can't remember the guy's name. He was probably 7'2", 7'3", big, tall guy. But one of his partners wore a mask, and he was well over 300 pounds.
Ouch. Holy smokes. That's huge. Okay. All right. Can you recall what the hardest knife edge chop you ever received?
Good question. Been chopped quite a bit, actually, throughout my time.
Wow.
It's hard
okay.
to say which one would be the hardest. I mean, I've been doing this for close to, you know, a little bit over 30 years, almost 31 years. So it's hard to say who actually gave me the hardest one.
Did you ever have a chance to wrestle a lady when you were working your way up the ladder, a lady wrestler?
No. No, never worked a female.
How's the roster of females at DCW? Do you have any promising female wrestlers?
We actually do not. There's not female wrestlers around here. You have to reach out of town and out of state to bring them in. I don't know why there's not any here. We just opened our school up, so we're hoping that we get some interest, you know, from the females, because they're definitely a good drawing power, you know, for a company.
Well, sometimes it just takes that one lady to be a little bit successful, and then they come in bunches. Sometimes that's works like that.
That's
okay.
True.
Well, Gene, I will give this. The time back over to Sign Guy. It was good talking with you.
Yeah, enjoyed it. Thank you.
And thank you for your service.
Thank you. You're welcome.
Back to you, Sign Guy.
Thank you, QT. Well, Gene, one of the more popular things on wrestling shows anywhere is the stipulation match. We've seen dozens upon dozens of different stipulation matches in the history of the wrestling business. Steel cage, bull rope, loser leave town, loser wears a dress. What are some of the stipulation matches that you've employed as a promoter?
Well, we've had loser leave DCW matches. Some of them have been 90 days, some of them have been 6 months. We did a strap match in the past. I actually have on that show on the 13th, we've got a 2 out of 3 falls match for the DCW Heavyweight Championship. We've done, trying to think of the name of it, Lumberjack match. There you go. You know, we've done Lumberjack's match on the outside. We've also done them where the Lumberjacks have had belts. So We try to stay pretty much old school with our thinking and what we do.
Obviously, professional wrestling is built on the support of the fan base, and ultimately the success comes down to if the fans are going to support the product or not. What type of market research, if any, do you as a promoter do to kind of get a feel for what the fans want to see, what they don't want to see, who they're going to respond to as far as performers, who they may not want to support as a performer, that type of thing?
Yeah. Our company, we do a family-friendly show. We push the family units. We have a lot of families with kids that come to our shows. So in the same token with that is my wife and myself, we are constantly talking to our fans about the shows. You know, what did you like about it? What didn't you like about it? So we make sure that they know that we're receptive to them so that they can tell us, you know, what they think about it to try to improve the product.
On a flip side of that, sometimes in wrestling, fans can get a little over-anxious, a little rambunctious, if you will, and they will try to do things that put not only themselves in danger, but potentially the wrestlers in danger. They put their fellow fans in danger, either by throwing things at the ring, trying to physically get into the ring, trying to get into altercations when the wrestlers are going to or from the ring. Have you had any instances of fans not behaving themselves properly at your shows?
think the worst thing that we had was we had a older woman. We called her Granny. She didn't like one of our managers, and she threw a glass of ice at him. We keep security rails around the ring, and I have security officers that are our people that are on all four corners of the ring. So we try to maintain the peace, you know, between the wrestlers and the fans. So this way there's, you know, no problems.
Now, in professional wrestling, as anyone that has worked in it knows, it's an industry where there's a lot of travel involved. You talked a little bit earlier about having gone to St. Louis and other towns with Crocker Promotions, but what would you say has been the longest road trip that you've taken?
Probably the longest one was when I had my group, the NWA group, up in Michigan. We went to the NWA convention in Tampa, Florida. So you're talking Detroit to Tampa. It's quite a good ride.
Sounds like it.
Now, obviously, with the amount of travel that happens in wrestling, there's going to be circumstances that will prevent performers from making a show, be it illness, injuries, traffic, plane difficulties. I'm sure being a promoter for as long as you have, you've heard a few different stories over the years as to why someone couldn't make a show. What would you say has been the most interesting excuse given as far as someone not being able to make their scheduled booking?
It's funny that you said that. I had a guy no-show me at my last show, and the excuse he used was, well, I'm working my job, and I forgot to pack my wrestling bag, so I can't make it on time, so I'm not coming.
Wow.
So, I mean, we throughout the years, you have people that don't show up, like you said, for various reasons. They have to work their real job. You know, they have to work overtime or whatever. I mean, it's all part of business. That's the way it is. But to, in this case, what I was telling you about, if all the years that I've worked this business, my bag is always in my car, always. You know, even if I'm going to somebody else's show and I'm not booked, my bag is in my car. And that's what I stress to all my wrestlers and the trainees that we have. Anytime you go to a show, if you're not booked on it and you're ready and you're able to wrestle, if you're trained and been given your release and you're ready to wrestle, you have your bag with you at all times. So for some guy to tell me that he didn't even pack his bag when he went to work, so he can't make it, that tells me he wasn't going to make it anyways.
Well, we're coming down to the final few minutes of the show, and I want to give you ample time. So if there's anything you would like to say to the listeners today, plug and promote anything and everything, social medias, merchandise, upcoming shows, your favorite car dealership, anything in the world you would like, the floor is all yours.
All right. All right. Well, I appreciate it. First, I want to say thank you for having me on the show. This has been interesting and informative. Just to cover the two shows that we got coming up, again, April 13th, it's at the Ryan Youth Center in Ocean Springs, Mississippi. Bell time there is 7 o'clock with our doors open at 6. We run that show every month, the second Saturday of every month. We run two shows a month. The other one, is, as we talked about, is at the VFW in Pascagoula. That will be April 27th. Their bell time there is at 7:30, and doors open there at 6:30. We usually have a standard pricing. Front row ringside is $12, with general admission being $10, and children 5 and under for free. A few of the businesses that I'd like to thank, we have a few sponsors, which one is Cole's Automotive. They're out of Van Cleve, Mississippi. They've been with us probably the longest right now. We have a Mexican restaurant called El Saltillo's there in Ocean Springs. Great food at that place. We have an attorney. It's called Turner at Law. They're out of Leakesville, Mississippi. He's a Social Security attorney. We've had some other ones, like any business. People come and go, how their business goes with, they're doing good or bad. We're in a process of trying to get our TV back up. So if anybody out there in the internet world, if you're a business and you want to sponsor a good wrestling company, you can feel free to contact me at any time, and I would love to talk to them. Also, any schools or fraternal organizations that need a fundraiser, we do that also. My phone number to reach me is area code 228-3990. I'm reachable on that all the time. That's my business phone / cell phone, so I can be reachable. So that pretty much plugs everything I'd like to plug again. I want to thank you for having me on your program.
It has been our pleasure, and I want to wish you and your company well as you continue to grow and reach new fans. Hopefully our paths will cross in a locker room at some point down the road. Fans, make sure you get out there 13th of April if you're anywhere near the area and check out some DCW action. Get on the YouTube, see what they have up there. Great young company. I think people will enjoy it. And we will be back with you Sunday afternoon. We have wrapping up currently an active month, the return of Karn Alexander to the show. And a week from today, we will be back with you with MD Leisky, the ring announcer of Blue Collar Wrestling in Oregon. So definitely make plans to be with us. And we will talk to you very soon. Get out there and support your local independents.